Welcome to Real Flix Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This week we did Dunkirk, made in 2017. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. Here's the description for Dunkirk. Allied soldiers from Belgium, the British Empire, and France are surrounded by the German army and evacuated during a fierce battle in World War II. So I was only able to see part of it because my life right now is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
What? So from the parts I saw, I give it a 5. From the parts I did see. I got to say, queuing up like that on a beachhead in the middle of a battle zone is insane.
Oh, yeah. And
take it to the British. They naturally queue. I think it's instinctual at this point.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. I want to jump into this a little bit. I don't know if you guys noticed there were no opening credits. I noticed this. I thought it was
really cool.
I thought it was really nice how they did that. The other thing I want to throw out real fast before we really dive into this too much is I really enjoyed the lack of music and soundtracks to this.
Yeah.
Hans Zimmerman, right. if you don't know the name, you're an idiot, did the soundtrack for this one, and it was very fitting. I thought it was perfect for the entire film. It was really well done on that aspect. I'm giving this one a straight 5 out of 5 as well.
I do dig movies that don't have soundtracks because it really puts you, it unnerves you and you don't really realize it.
Oh, yeah.
No Country for Old Men, the reason why that movie was kind of weird for like halfway through the movie is you realized, wait a minute, there's no music, there's no buildup. It's just flat. I actually really kind of like that.
Well, Hans Zimmerman did the same thing in the opening sequence of The Dark Knight, where the Joker is robbing the bank, and how they did that entire scene and how he just basically had like kind of like a string type thing going on to build up the tension and to heighten the awareness of it. And that's basically what he did through this entire film.
I enjoyed it. Ryan?
Yeah, I will absolutely agree with you on the score. Hans Zimmer is a fucking master. And he's done 1,000 things. I mean, really, like every popular movie
close
the last,
to 500.
You know, 25 years probably.
76.
But the way see in
that's
movies, weird. You obviously can't feel what the person is feeling.
Oh yeah.
So you kind of get you to that place, and Hans Zimmer again is the master at that. Sometimes music is overused, and it's like, okay, obviously you're trying to push me in a particular direction here. But the way that this one was done was very subtle, don't even really notice it, you know.
Yeah. So
what you do notice, though, is the absolute silence of some of those scenes.
So what's your rating, Ryan?
Okay, so this is going to be the weird part. 3.5. Is really the most I can go on this one. It is a good movie, especially technically speaking. It looked unbelievably amazing.
It was a very pretty movie.
Yeah.
Very pretty movie, but also very disjointed. Like I think I knew one guy's name in this movie.
Yeah.
See, the way...
I took it...
Sorry, the way I took it, and I've seen a couple other films like that, it seemed like you weren't necessarily supposed to, and this is kind of out of left field, maybe not know individuals, but just kind of get a sense of the situation. I mean, kind of like kind of like the opposite of Behind Enemy Lines with Owen Wilson. Oh, yeah.
Well, look, it's definitely the opposite of, this is the opposite of Pearl Harbor. Okay, where we wanted to see everything but that fucking love story. Okay, but this one was just kind of telling the story and more or less like I definitely get the point of it. Okay, as far as the victory and just surviving, you know what I mean, and being able to come through something like that. And I love that they went with kind of the no-name actors just to show, like, look, these young, really, really young, inexperienced dudes going through this really insane thing. But there was no real storytelling going on in this.
Yeah.
And it was really, really backwards and told in 1,000 different pieces all over the place. Like, see, the weird thing is that Inception did not confuse me at all. This movie... confused the shit out of me because they jump back and forth in time with only the most subtle hints to let you know, like, hey, by the way, this was 10 minutes ago.
So, okay, question, well, did you... One more question.
I want to address...
Did Looper confuse you?
No, Looper made sense.
Looper? Shit, no.
Okay, because the reason I'm asking, because I read a lot and I know a lot of people who are really confused by Looper, so I'm just trying to figure out where in the confusion it lies. Okay.
Anyways, so...
Trust me, I'm not a guy who gets confused by movies.
Yeah, Looper didn't confuse me either. That's why I was kind of shocked.
My interpretation and what my take in on this film was and why I rate it so high is because of the fact that it wasn't trying to get you to care about a character. Like, I didn't give a shit when George died. I really didn't care. That was about one of the only characters that you really got a name out of is George and Mr. Dawson. I didn't even know the other guy's name was Tommy until now. but the way that they told the story was they were telling you about the situation that they were in.
Like I said.
And that's what I really appreciated about this film. And the only film I could really compare it to who kind of did the same thing, except for they did have two characters, and it was probably the time of the filmmaking why they did that, was All Quiet on the Western Front. And they really told you about what was going on with the whole foxhole situation. They didn't really tell you specific little details about everything. They just told you what it was like to be in a foxhole at the time. Is
right. And I definitely understand that they're not trying to tell the Band of Brothers, you know, like about this particular unit, and it's through their eyes, you know what I mean? But at the same time, the idea of a film, you know, for a movie like this is still to tell a narrative. You know, the narrative doesn't have to be a love story shoehorned into it, or a bunch of characters, you know, that you're supposed to really endear yourselves to, you know, in the comic relief and all that bullshit. It doesn't have to be
Hold on, I want to bring up some.
It has to have some kind of perspective.
They did.
I guess that they were trying to go with a big epic on this one.
But they weren't giving you
the perspective was from, okay, like the guy on the boat, you know, obviously you're not going to show all, you know, however many hundreds of boats they sent out there. So you focus on one boat, you focus on one plane, you focus on a few guys in the beach, a few moments. But
see, I think that's the
thing. Aside from that, it's just like, oh, war sucks.
So you missed the point when they actually put up, like, at the start of the movie, they put up on the ground, basically. I don't remember exactly what they said, but they were saying the troops on the ground. They were showing you that perspective. And then they showed you the perspective, and they even said it on the screen. They put up sea, and then they put up air. So they were showing you all the aspects that were in Dunkirk that you needed to pay attention to get the whole big picture of what was going on.
It was a lack of any individual perspective.
So you needed somebody up there like Ross Perot with a pointer. So this is what we're going to be doing next. And
no,
I can hear the sucking from Mexico
saying,
from here.
At this point, does he know?
This could have just as easily been a documentary if you wanted to tell it like this.
Then that's why they gave it the name Dunkirk.
Well, that's one of the reasons I actually kind of thought it was cool, was I did like, granted it was disjointed, but I did like kind of the hands-off approach. Like, there was no one person they really focused on. Like,
well, they did focus on Tom Hardy quite a bit.
Like, Behind Enemy Lines, for example,
that
basically
was the airplane pilot.
It's about Owen Wilson and everything, the shenanigans that happened to him. This movie, it was the lack of an individual perspective that I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, I like the fact that they gave you the grand perspective of everything that was going
on. On the other hand, if I watch too many movies of this, it might get annoying.
But in my opinion, what that did is it really showed you how bad they were up shit's creek without a paddle. And that's really what it was. And they were just screwed. And I still, like, even watching this movie when I was done, I'm like, I still can't believe that we were sitting out of this war at this time.
You know, it's funny. I was actually doing research on this before the show started, and there's a movie called Operation Dunkirk. I think it was made in 2017.
I remember
or 2016.
Hearing about it. No, wasn't longer than that.
It's one of these movies. Like, I watched the opening bit of it, so I'm going to finish it because I'm curious in the difference between the movies. I thought I'd say that because this is a story that I don't, like, I know of.
Oh, it was 2017. Yeah,
I do know of from, you know, being a big history buff, but I don't know too many movies that talk about this. So this is one of the reasons
they
I was really...
cover it in history. They touched on it when I was in school.
Well, yeah, but I read about it, like, years after being out of high school. But I do love the fact they touched on it because usually in war movies, especially if you're talking about the allies of the United States, it's usually favorable.
No.
This really wasn't on the most favorable side of the allies.
No.
You know, especially in the beginning with the beach scenes.
Well, this was still when Hitler was doing his blitzkrieg, and that's why they had to run their asses out of there.
Because 39, right? Is this when this takes place? 38 or 39?
So. Yeah. It was a few years before we jumped in, before Japan forced our hand. But
I was wicked excited to see that they were making this movie in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things that I remembered, you know, a handful of details about from like high school.
Yeah, them dropping the pamphlets. I thought that was a good touch that they followed through with.
Well,
that.
And it's mostly to do with like the British reaction subsequent to the Dunkirk thing, you know, and then us kind of getting involved and the turning point that was the Battle of Dunkirk, you know.
Yeah.
I did want to kind of.
But,
I did want to talk about the conversation we were having earlier about the soundtrack, and Ryan said something interesting, and Gone with the Wind and some of those older movies, they always had overtures and ending scene soundtracks. And I find it interesting, this movie specifically and kind of the modern movies, they don't really do the giant opening audio, the soundtrack.
Well, you're talking about like what they did with the James Bond?
Yeah, that's very rare, which I liked on this movie.
All I thought, James, was he rode a blazing saddle.
That's my favorite one, yeah.
So I do really like the fact that they're getting away from that. I mean, they don't do it in movies. I think they should, but I like the more subtle soundtracks and the subtle build-up.
We're going to see something like this happen on a regular basis off of this.
I would love
to see more war movies like this. You know, because this isn't really like a traditional war movie by no stretch.
No.
It's more to do with like a legitimate take of just like look, this is a very important thing, you know, in a very important time in history in World War II that we're trying to tell you the story of, you know, and I definitely would like to see it. I'd like to see the bridge gapped or the gap bridged a little bit more. You know, mix a little more story, a little more character narrative in there.
I kind of like the docudrama, the kind of the hands-off approach to doing a war movie. I like that because it's so kind of refreshing versus like Save It Private Ryan, The Thin Blue Line, or Red Line. It's like all these movies are heavy-handed. I kind of like the fact that you're just kind of viewing it as it's happening. I thought that was kind of a really neat touch.
You know, I agree.
I'm a big fan of war movies.
I like Saving Private Ryan. It's one of my favorites of all time. But for me, like, watching it in retrospect now, I think that it did kind of bother me, the whole thing of that they were chasing, that they had their own side mission with everything going on. That's why I was really appreciative of Tom Hanks putting out the Band of Brothers. I think that was amazing. So, but I don't know, watching it now, it's like there's little bits and pieces of it that still kind of bother me. The fact that they were... Basically, they had a whole plot that had nothing really to do with the war. They were just out there to save one guy. You know?
That was the point.
I know, and that's the
whole, that was the point
that's
of the movie.
The title of the movie as well. It's just, I don't know, I prefer something like this where you actually are immersed into the actual battle and what's going on around, and you get a full perspective thing. Like, I enjoy Patton as well, but...
I would say one of the movies, you know, at least in my opinion, that I think is the closest to this, that's the oldest, is 12 O'Clock High.
Well, yeah,
because that movie was one of the first movies that I've ever seen that wasn't in the airplane dropping bombs. It was everything else. It got you seen behind the scenes and more of the characters. This one actually had main characters and secondary characters. This one didn't as much, in my opinion, but I kind of like that.
Well, I mean, you got another one that comes to mind that's kind of like the Saving Private Ryan thing, and I do enjoy it as a Dirty Dozen as well. That's another one where it's like they kind of had their own little kind of play game going on with, during a very serious time of war, and I do like the Dirty Dozen, don't get me wrong, but it's just something like that. It's like you just kind of, it's like the background is the war in those.
So I'm sticking with my 5 out of 5, at least the half I actually saw. James?
You know, I wanted to bring this up too. The thing that really sold it for me were the airplane battles. How they did that is the most gritty I've ever seen.
I'll tell you why I'm disappointed, James, with the air battles. The movie wasn't entirely about those air battles.
Yeah. I agree.
Like give me an hour and a half worth of that shit, and that was the most legit dogfighting that I've ever seen in a movie, let alone World War II. You know?
I mean, that was really well done. I love the fact that they had sections where, you know, I mean, he's pulling up, trying to get his thing up on, and I love the fact he didn't hold the trigger down. That was so awesome. He was conserving ammo, people.
Well, that's what they actually did. They did small bursts.
But basically, you look at like Top Gun or other ones, and they're just brrr, no.
Well, I don't know about Top Gun, but World War II military aircraft, you'd actually melt the barrel. You'd actually have some technical issues if you just held down the trigger.
But, I mean, and then there were sections, and this goes back to what I was saying with Hans Zimmerman, is you have sections where he's trying to get up on there, and you kind of hear a little bit of string in the background, and then like he kind of goes quiet, and everything goes quiet, and you just hear the sound of the engine, the wind gust, and thing just that as he's trying to focus in on his target. Those were amazing.
See, I would say this is because of like David Attenborough and some of the better documentaries that have come out the last couple of years, the nature documentaries, because it's kind of like what this had the feeling of, like the scenes that needed music had music, the scenes that didn't. And traditionally, especially in the 80s, that scene would have had, the quiet scenes would have had some really annoying audio soundtrack, or it would have driven me nuts.
I want to bring up one more point. I'm sure Ryan's going to love this section too. How badass was it that Tom Hardy came back in the plane gliding and took out that bomber?
Dude,
like that
just all like Russian night witches style, engine Jesus. Killed and coasted by like a ghost plane.
Yeah, that was so badass, guys. I mean, and that was something that they actually did in World War II that was documented, that there were multiple pilots who either ran out of gas or they stalled their engine and kept fighting.
I'm trying to remember if it was World War One or World War Two. I feel like it was World War One, where the night witches. Yeah. It was an all women squadron. Yeah. They would literally go in for late night bombing runs. They'd kill their engines about a mile and a half out, coast in, drop bombs, float out about another mile, and then kick the engines back.
I think it was World War One.
Scared the shit out of everybody.
If I remember correctly, but both sides had in World War Two had unpowered planes in one form or another, whether it was recon or stuff like that.
Germans were big proponents of that.
So it was that actually happened.
Yeah.
And
anyways,
with that being said, Ryan,
you said you're going to stick with your 8. I'm sticking with my 5 as well.
Ryan, you sticking with your 3.5?
I am. I mean, really, just because I like the movie. I really do. It's to me, it's not perfect by any stretch. I love that he went with film and not digital. It gave it a real old school gritty look to it. I love that. But just all over the place with how the story was cut together, really, is what was distracting
it.
As fuck.
I have a feeling that's going to...
It was really distracting.
I have a feeling that that's going to be the major drawback of this movie for years to come, is
the fact that
it's kind of
the
all over the place.
Storytelling is different.
Yeah, because it's one of the major complaints people have with...
It's very non...
Like, with, for example...
It's very non-linear, you know?
Where with the J.R.R. Tolkien's books, for example, that still, even today, is the major complaint of his storytelling style.
I like that. I remember that was the first
book I enjoyed. His fucking problem was he would explain, like the way that everything looks for about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
That didn't actually bother me. But so, ladies and gentlemen,
really?
God,
dude, I didn't need all the descriptions of all that shit after a while.
Ladies and gentlemen...
Did you read the Silmarillion?
Ladies and gentlemen, we do have a Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/realflixreviews. You can also catch us on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and more.
Those poor Moore bastards.
I don't know. I kind of liked it, and that's also how Peter Jackson made six films out of it, was by all the fucking descriptions.
Yeah, just out of The Hobbit.
God damn.
Yes.
Jeez Louise. So, throw some more CGI up your butt.
Ron Howard gets desperate, goes dangerous on Han Solo set. Are you guys even remotely interested? The only reason I bring that up is... it's Ron Howard doing a Star Wars movie. I mean, I've always been a big Ron Howard fan. James is shaking his head.
I like Opie, but yeah, I'm not excited to see Ronnie Howard try to do something with that. I just kind of like done with Star Wars for a bit. I mean, we just take a step back.
Oh, it's
back
gonna be,
to real Star Wars stuff.
The House of Mouse owns it. You're gonna get a new Star Wars movie every 2 years until the day you die.
Yeah,
you're
gonna have the same releases over and over every 20 years.
And you're gonna have characters that you don't remember in the first one because they're an ancillary character in a bar in the first movie in a 3 second scene. So,
do you think they're gonna get Elton John to start doing songs for them?
So, Ryan,
I'd like to see Elton John's take on the cantinas.
Are you excited at all about the Han Solo or any of the new Star Wars movies? I mean, I am.
I'll tell you what. They've got my money forever. Okay, let's get that out of the way. I'm kind of with James, though, like now we're just going to be, you know, sort of inundated with Star Wars stuff. And it's always a double-edged sword when your childhood starts to get sold back to you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's but I like Ron Howard. I mean, I like his instincts when it comes to movies. Maybe he suffered a Da Vinci fucking code.
I agree with you, though. I mean, I'm going to see it regardless.
The way he makes everything look, I mean, I would expect this to look more like Rogue One. You know, that kind of, I think I've said the word gritty a thousand times today. That gritty feel to it.
I want
to
bring that up. I mean, Rogue One in comparison with The Force Awakens. I didn't really like either of them.
I fucking loved Rogue One.
I didn't like either of them, really.
See, my biggest problem with my biggest problem with 7 was the fact it was basically the same exact movie as the first one, except with different characters. The storytelling, yeah. I found it annoying, but on the other hand, actually, no. I don't think there's a person on the planet who hasn't seen Star Wars in one form or another. I didn't think you actually had to redo the story. I understand why you would, but at this point... doesn't everybody own a copy of at least the first three Star Wars movies?
Basically. You know,
look, it's the same fucking universe telling the story just after the third one, or, you know, sort of far after the third one. But, I mean, how much fucking different do you expect it to be? I get with people's gripe about, like, okay, there was a lot of little throwback things to filming styles or to simple things.
Actually, my biggest...
Yeah, a little bit of member berries going on. Aside from that, I mean, you're still telling a Star Wars story.
Well, my biggest problem is she's basically Luke Skywalker. That was the reason it bugged me the most was how they did the storytelling.
I was just more bothered by her. Stop holding my hand!
There has to be a fucking Luke Skywalker character.
Oh, yeah, you know, I just wish they had done it differently than introduce... her character the same way they introduced Mark Hamill. I mean, it's a little bit different, but it's pretty much the same thing. But I understand
why.
Well,
yeah, but...
it bugs me.
But again, I mean, you know, like, look, like, again, like, little throwback things I get, but it's still about just, like, the individual people, I mean, that are affecting the larger universe, you know, the one person who has the most to do with the Rebel Alliance, that was Luke, started out as a little farm kid and then turned out to be, you know, their greatest pilot and Jedi Master and all these things. This chick, you know, a junker on a planet and then turns out to be very, very important. It's the Star Wars narrative.
It is.
I am curious in what they're going to do with the Princess Leia character. Because I know...
dead.
Well, and the third one was completely filmed. I think they had to do some CGI stuff. I think I remembered towards the end of the filming of the new one. But are they going to kill off Princess Leia? Is she going to be in a remote part? I'm curious in how they do it, because she's one of, at least in the extended original universe, was extremely important to the story.
No, she's going to be
on
Dagobah.
Well, obviously, that goes without saying. No, it's... I'm still fucking really sad about that one. That really fucking sucked.
Carrie Fisher?
I don't know how they're gonna do it. I think they're gonna do it as just simply as respectfully as possible to Carrie Fisher and to the Star Wars universe.
Because
I don't think they're gonna recast her. You know, I don't think they're gonna do a CGI version of her throughout the whole thing. I don't know how much of it they've already filmed, what kind of stock footage they have that they might try to cobble together. That might be a route. Who knows?
See, my only thought is personally, I think they should just let her go. But storyline-wise, I hope they do something.
Well, you have to explain it.
Yeah. So, I mean, are they going
to
have her,
so
like...
Somebody's going to have to explain where or what, why she's gone or where she is.
Yeah, I mean, is there enough stock footage where they could have her pop up on a screen and say, I'm a blah, blah, you know, I'm away here, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't know. I'm really bummed about Carrie Fisher just because she's such an important part of my childhood, story-wise.
I don't want to make it sound like I'm all bummed out because, oh wait, it's going to ruin the Star Wars story. Like that's kind of secondary to just like she was kind of an awesome person.
Well,
you know?
I mean, if she's not in them, then I'm not going to have a craving for Cinnabons.
Jeez,
what, too soon?
A little. Okay. So, what do you guys think that the new It has been? I haven't seen this week's box office, but has been, at least for the last 3 weeks to a month, has been pretty much the king of the box office.
Well, I watched it, and it's deserved.
Yeah,
really? So is it that good?
I watched it, too. I enjoyed it better than the original one.
Compared to Tim Curry.
Way more than the original.
Well, how was... Because the reason why I love the original is strictly because of Tim Curry. Because I'm literally one of his biggest fans.
Skarsgård's little brother does a fantastic job.
Really? Okay, that's good to hear.
I think I enjoyed this one more just because, I mean, the original one, it was just so really a letdown when you finally found out what it was. And
by the way,
Pennywise really was.
The new one really reminds me of Stranger Things on the trailers.
They kind of do, but that's kind of how the first one was, though. It's kind of the same thing. But
well, yeah, and Stranger Things is definitely kind of a throwback towards that Stephen King style of 80s movie. So one is referencing the other, just not in the opposite way.
Yeah,
but also one of the kids fucking from Stranger Things is the main character in It.
Yeah,
one of them.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. And
I'm really looking forward to the next one.
I think what happened is the fact that all the kids that watched the one that was made in 84, you know, kind of got over their fear of clowns now. So they're more looking at it as this is kind of nostalgia of the crap that scared the shit out of me when I was four.
I still know a few people who don't like clowns because of It, and they're adults.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, you know, that most of them, I didn't say all of them, quite a few of them, finally got over their fear of clowns. You're welcome, Ryan.
Have any of you guys seen Mother, the new Jennifer Lawrence movie?
Oh, no, the Jennifer Lawrence, no.
That movie, apparently, so this one's curious because apparently she's polarizing because I've heard, oh, it was an amazing movie to this movie sucked more than Geely, so...
Ooh, damn.
So I was wondering if any of you guys saw it, because I'm not going to see it. I'm not a big
Jennifer
Lawrence fan.
Somebody actually compared it to Jiggly?
Yeah.
Damn, that's messed up.
So I'm kind of wondering if you guys saw it or not.
No, I haven't seen it. She's kind of on my nerves. I just think I think she should kind of stick with superhero films. I really don't think she does well in these other ones.
She did announce, she's taken a little bit of a break from acting. Which
I know.
She's been nonstop acting for a while, so it's not surprising.
And she was kind of like the new Megan Fox type thing.
Honestly,
going on.
I didn't really think she did all that good on the X-Men.
I mean, that's terrible to fucking try to compare her to Megan Fox. She's actually an amazing
actor. I wasn't saying her acting. I was just saying like she was basically the heartthrob of a lot of guys for a while.
Well, look, I mean, you know,
you got a crush on her. She's hot.
Chance when you got it, man.
Yeah, but you know,
You gotta make that money while you can. I mean, somebody wants to offer you a shit ton of roles, you know, you're gonna do it.
Yeah,
I think she's made good choices. Apparently, I was one of the four people that liked Passengers.
I haven't watched Passengers.
See, I still don't really think she's found the movie genre that really fits her acting style. I didn't really like her as Mystique.
I disagree entirely.
I liked her as Mystique.
Yeah, I didn't.
I didn't like the getup of her Mystique.
It may be the fact that I don't really like Mystique, so I don't really have anything invested in the character. I mean, she did okay. I thought she was a little one-dimensional, but
I liked Mystique. She was a pretty badass character.
I thought she did okay in the was it Catching Fire? What are those movies are called?
The Hunger Games?
Yeah, I thought she did okay in the Hunger Games, considering what it was.
Okay, all right.
I mean, it's not the best acting in the world, but it's not, you know. The movie wasn't written well, and the dialogue was horrible.
You know,
what's up?
Out of all the movies that she's been in lately, and he's going to be like, I liked her in Hunger Games.
Yeah, well, I considered that was the movie that really made her popular. I thought it's only kind of fair. I don't think she would have been round as much if it wasn't for the Hunger Games, because I think that's what brought her attention to Hollywood. In my opinion.
Yeah, like obviously, but then she started doing the X-Men and Silver Linings Playbook, American Hustle. I mean, you know, she's done a lot of shit since Hunger Games.
Yeah, she's a very versatile actress, but I don't know, she's...
I always thought she was kind of flat in her acting in a good portion of her movies. Silver Lining Playbook, I thought she did pretty good, though.
The bitch that got replaced in the Dark Knight series? Who the hell was that?
Was it Maggie Gyllenhaal?
No.
Oh, no, she was the one that replaced her.
Yeah.
Was Katie Holmes.
Kate Hudson.
Katie Holmes, thank you.
Yeah. Katie Holmes, not Kate Hudson.
She's a horrible actress.
I
she's the one that I would say is like one-dimensional and really doesn't have any acting abilities. Just
see, I've always had a theory when it comes to actor and actresses that some actor actresses, their ability and their acting style really fits only certain genres. Like, was it Christopher Lambert, the guy from the Highlander series? He's really only good in a very limited, in my humble opinion, movie style. Like, Michael Ironside is really good in certain movies. You know, some actors have the ability to act outside of that limitation, in my opinion. One of the reasons you've never seen Steven Seagal out and in a, like, serious role, because the dude couldn't act his way out of a wet paper bag.
All of his roles are
supposed
to be
serious. Yeah, but most actors, aside from your Steven Seagal and shit, are actors. You know, their job is to become different people.
Yeah, but I don't...
I'm not surprised when an actor can do two completely different roles.
Yeah, well, but I mean, if we're going to really throw that out there, we got to bring in, like, Dolph Lundgren is another one that really never adventured outside of the action genre. You got Jean-Claude Van Damme and did the same thing, and then if we want to go to the female sides, you got who the frick is that stupid bitch? Amanda Bynes, she's stuck with those specific roles.
I don't know if I'd consider Amanda Bynes, because I don't know if she was around long enough when she was an adult. I think being a kid child
Amanda
actor is different.
Amanda Bynes? How the fuck are we talking about actors and then Amanda Bynes comes up?
One-dimensional actors and actresses.
But she was a child actor.
She was a Disney star.
I don't give a crap.
No, she was a Nickelodeon star, wasn't she?
I think you actually right.
Whatever. Who
anyway,
gives a
whatever.
Shit?
That's what I'm saying. Is like you don't really give a shit about these guys. You want to see people who jump out of their genres and try different things. I mean, that's why I had such great respect for Robin Williams, because he went all over the place and nailed practically every role he was ever given.
I personally,
except for toys. Let's not talk about that.
Robin Williams is rare in that regard. I don't think all actors and actresses have the ability to do that as well as he did.
We got Willem Dafoe. He can jump around on a bunch of different roles.
As long as the roles are creepy.
Yeah, as long as we stay away from the Spider-Mans.
Well, I'll tell you who my pick is for the sleeper guy who can do all kinds of different shit. It's fucking John C. Reilly. John C. Reilly is quietly one of the... Well, no, but I'm saying somebody like Robin Williams who can actually pull off that kind of comedy, that incredibly funny, quick-witted kind of comedy, but then also do shit like Magnolia, Gangs of New York.
Awakenings.
You know, recently he was in King Kong.
Watch the 1980s, or it's either late 80s or early 90s, the movie Awakenings. It was the first movie I ever saw him in that was serious. It'll blow your mind.
Well, I was going to throw out, you got Christian Bale as well. I mean, he's a very versatile actor. I mean, he has a great slapstick comedy like Robin Williams, though.
that's the thing is, it's to me, the singular character of like Robin Williams, a lot of people can pull off the drama stuff. Drama's easy. Comedy's fucking hard.
Yeah. I think to do drama well is hard.
I mean, Kristen Bell's funniest role is freaking American Psycho. That really is his goofy play on a guy. So, I mean, that's...
Right.
And it's not that I did that because of
your
post.
Do you like Huey Lewis in the news?
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. It wasn't because I saw the post that I brought him up. Yeah, I mean, so... Oh, you got Robert Downey Jr. There's another versatile guy.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is a dude who can do anything he wants ever. Yeah.
I actually think I think he's improved over the years. But I think he's always been good at doing that. See, this is why I think it's rare. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody has the ability to play any type of genre. I just think to do it well, I think every actor really has his own niche. Him or her has their own niche and what genre they do like well.
Well, you've always struck me as the type of person who sees an actor in a particular type of role and then never wants to see him in another type of role ever.
It depends on the actor, but normally no. I'll usually watch anybody in anything. If I really like the movie and I really like that character, it is hard sometimes to see him or her outside of that role. But if the story's good enough, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Anyways.
But it took a long time for me not to see Brendan Fraser as Encino Man.
I just still wish I had never watched Monkey Bone.
So, ladies and gentlemen, next week is my pick, and I decided to do... an interesting movie. It's a British sci-fi horror made in the 50s, and on DVD it's really hard to find. It's called X the Unknown. You'll see. It's actually kind of I think it's hilarious. So what's the TV show?
We are doing the TV show Room 104. We are doing the first episode, Richard.
Cool. So. Ladies and gentlemen, I gave Dunkirk a 5 out of 5.
Ralphie,
James gave it a 5 out of 5. Ryan, what was your rating? 4 out of 5?
6.
3.5.
3.5 out of 5. Next week, doing X the Unknown along with Room 104.
Yes.
Season 1, episode 1.
Called Ralphie.
So, ladies and gentlemen, for Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston, as always, thank you for listening. Thank you.